radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again, to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thanks, Dave, and once again, welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. Coming up on today's program, it's the award-winning mystery series Murder by Experts. But first, on the lighter side, it's comedic genius Bob Hope. Undoubtedly one of the greatest entertainers of World War II, if not the century, Bob Hope's success in Broadway's Ballyhoo of 1932 led to his debut on CBS's radio program, The Fleischman Hour. Pepsodent began sponsoring The Bob Hope Show, which aired on NBC through April of 1955. On today's program, we'll enjoy an appearance by special guest star Basil Rathbone. Rathbone received Oscar nominations for performances in Romeo and Juliet and If I Were King. Rathbone was perhaps best known as Sherlock Holmes, a role he played on screen for 14 years and 6 years on radio. On today's program from Hollywood, Basil Rathbone previews his new film, The Mad Doctor, and joins Bob in the search for Yehudi, with musical appearances by Six Hits and a Miss and Skinny Ennis. From January of 1941, it's The Bob Hope Show with special guest star Basil Rathbone on this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Burton Marr, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again, to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
When you're feeling lonesome, strictly on your lonesome, where there's life, remember there is still Bob Hope.
Thank you so much. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob, middle of the winter Hope, telling you if you've got preserves in the cellar, use Pepsodent and you'll preserve what's under your smeller. Or, this is the Pepsodent kid, Bob Hope, telling you to always use our product, because it's better to have a sweet toot than to have them all go toot sweet. I'm a little tired tonight. I went down to get my license plates yesterday. I just got back. I must have been standing in the wrong line. When I got to the window, they handed me a uniform and a gun. You know what a license plate is? That's the last thing that whizzes over your head when you try to get across Hollywood Boulevard. I wouldn't say the line waiting for license plates was long. All I know is, when I finally got to the end of the line, I had to buy Colorado plates. One guy there always got his license plates in 15 minutes, but his gun jammed. No prompting from the audience now. No, at least I had a good idea. Did that line move slowly? I didn't realize how slow it was moving until I went up to one old guy in line and said, "Have you been waiting long?" He said, "Long? Look, I can tuck my beard inside my diaper." I stood in line 3 days getting my license plates, and it wasn't worth all the trouble, I thought, as I shoved them under the door of the finance company. Yeah, Yes, sir. You know, California automobile rules are very silly. The drivers have to put a license plate on the front of the cars and a license plate on the back, then they run over you sideways. And this year, California has something new in license plates. Besides the numbers on them, they're adding kings, queens, and jacks, so pedestrians can play solitaire while waiting for the ambulance. And of course, the Chamber of Commerce insists that every license plate has a feather on it. That's so when you hit a pedestrian, he dies with a tickled expression. And oh, I must tell you, Bing Crosby, the mutter, is putting license plates on his horses. That way, when he enters a horse in a race, he'll know what year he sent him out. But isn't it wonderful to have every car numbered and cataloged? Now, if you get hit on the street, you just take down the license number, give it to a cop, he gives it to the sergeant, he gives it to the Motor Vehicle Bureau, they send it to the state capitol, they look all through their records, and 2 months later, they send you back the information that you were run over by your own wife. But you really have to be in condition to cross Hollywood Boulevard. No kidding. I'm a little flabby lately. I crossed the street this morning, and when I looked back, the rest of me was waiting for the light to change. But I always go for long walks along Hollywood Boulevard. Yesterday, I hiked 26 blocks, but she wouldn't look back once. And there's... You don't get that at first, but after a while, it grows on you. Then you hate yourself for it. But you know... And there's nothing like taking a long hike up into the mountains around here. If you go up high enough, you can see all the snow that's sitting there, waiting until it can melt so it can visit your house and take your whole family out to the beach.
A Jimmy Fiddler song, I Do Mean You. Jimmy, for Bella, yes, sir. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to present one of Hollywood's leading actors, soon to be seen in the Paramount picture, The Mad Doctor, and familiar to all of you on the air, that super detective, Sherlock Holmes, Mr. Basil Rathbone.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, I'm really glad to welcome you here tonight, Basil. I've certainly enjoyed you as Sherlock Holmes. The part fits you to a T.
Well, thank you again, Bob.
You know, I wish I could find my niche in the radio world.
What was that?
Niche.
Well, scratch it, old boy.
But tell me, Basil, how does my program compare with yours?
Oh, it's very different. For instance, we don't have a studio audience at all.
Well, then you mean you go through an entire program without any laughs?
Yes, but you see, we have an excuse.
I've got one, too. I forgot to run through the audience with my feather tonight. But I will say, though, Sherlock Holmes' mysteries are really exciting, and I love that Dr. Watson.
Yes, he's wonderful. Nigel Bruce plays the part, you know.
Oh, he does a grand job. He makes an ideal partner for you.
Indeed he does. I realize it more than ever tonight.
I'm alone. Look, I appreciate you dropping in tonight, Basil. After all, we both work at Paramount. In fact, I have the dressing room right next to yours.
Oh, are you the one that has the dressing room right next to mine?
Yes, why?
Must you cook?
Well, I've got to do something with these eggs, but I couldn't resist it. I had to do it. But I like my new dressing room. You know, the last star who had it was a very distinguished actor.
Yes, too bad Rin Tin Tin died. You're still getting his mash notes, aren't you?
That's a lie. Pauline, you ruined my straight line. I am not getting Rin Tin Tin's mash notes. It's a lie.
Is that so? What about that note you got yesterday? Honey, meet me at the corner of Hollywood and Vine in half an hour. If that's okay, wag your tail out of the window.
Well, you know, one gets all kinds of fan mail. It's tough being a celebrity, isn't it, Basil?
It certainly is, Bob. You're not missing a thing.
Wait. You're razzmatazz tonight, Baz. Wait a minute. I'm well thought of at Paramount. You know that.
Yes, everybody on the lot has a good word for you.
They certainly do.
Yes, it's a good word. Too bad we can't use it on the air.
I don't know how you got all the laughs. That's a... I ought to have my mother look over the scripts. You know, Basil, our listeners would be interested in knowing how you ever learned to turn on such a wonderful, horrible sneer.
Oh, that's quite simple, Bob. I used to be a waiter in the Brown Derby.
I thought maybe you'd been listening to this program.
No, that's where I get my snarl. I used it quite a bit in a picture I just finished at Paramount called The Mad Doctor. I go around killing all my patients.
Really? Say, well, how about giving the folks a pre... Let's get together now. Come now. How about giving the folks a preview of the Mad Doctor tonight, Basil? Suppose I were going around selling magazines and I dropped into your office. What would happen to me?
Well, let's try it and see. All
right. Oh, boy, what a job. Selling magazines from door to door. I've been walking all day. Boy, have I got blisters. Doggone, got a flat in my left toe. Gee, this is a big office building. I wonder if I should try this office. That's a lovely sign he's got on the door. Dr. Fennessy. That sounds menacy. Anybody in?
Yes, I'm the doctor. Speak up, young man. What's wrong with you?
Oh, nothing. I'm selling magazines. I'm working my way through.
Through what?
Are they going to tell me after I sell the magazine?
Well, don't stand there staring at me.
Huh?
Why do you stare at me? Everybody stares at me. Why do they stare at me?
Well, maybe it's because you've got two heads.
Oh, so that's why I always have the feeling that somebody's looking over my shoulder. Excuse me a minute, old man. I have a patient in the next room with a slight headache. Couldn't let him suffer, you know. I say, young man, would you like to see my latest experiment?
Is that part of the 40-cent tour?
Yes, you see, my latest experience is very unique. Nobody ever thought of it before. I'm crossing a mouse with a mouse.
You crossed a mouse with a mouse? What did it get you?
Mouses.
Say, you know what? I think there's something wrong with you.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I was thwarted as a boy. I wanted to go to the circus. They wouldn't let me. I wanted to play baseball with the other kids. They wouldn't let me.
Why wouldn't they let you?
I had a contract with Hobby Lobby. Do you think my actions are a little strange?
Why, no, but if you must foam at the mouth, foam Pepsodent.
My friend, I could do a lot for you. I have one experiment I could perform, and it would make you a man with long, beautiful, golden curls.
Oh, I'd like that.
You'd like to have long, golden curls? Why?
I want to be the talk of the draft camp. They read.
Come over here and sit next to this machine.
Please, please, all I want you to do is buy my magazine. Buy my magazine.
I see you're starting to get hot under the collar. Collar! I'm not only nuts, I'm corny.
Well, look, doctor, what are you going to do to me?
Now for my greatest experiment. When I turn this switch, you'll never think of anything but beautiful girls. All your life, you'll just think of Hedy Lamarr and Madeline Carroll.
Oh, gee, that's wonderful. Turn the switch, quick.
All right, here goes. Well?
Doc, something went wrong. It's terrible. All I can think of is Brenda and Cabina. I keep seeing their faces.
You say all you can think of is Brenda and Cabina?
Yes.
Couldn't let him suffer, you know.
That Sherlock Holmes show you have every Sunday night for Goldmark quinine cold tablets is sure swell. Stick around, Basil. Take it, Skinny, my man.
Ada, sweet as apple cider, sweeter than all I know. Come out in the silvery moonlight, of love will whisper so soft and low. Seems though can't live without you. Listen, oh honeydew, Ada, Ada Lasher, I love you, Ada dear, I do. Without you, listen, oh honeydew, Ada, Ada Lasher, I love you, Ada, deed I do.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
X marks the spot where my heart.
And now Bob Hope presents his version of X Marks the Spot. We take you now to the offices of the Daily Globe.
Stop the presses. Stop the presses.
What's wrong, Chief? We're just getting out the late edition.
Stop the presses. Throw out the front page. We just got the biggest story of the year. He's been found.
Who's been found?
Yehudi.
Yehudi? Who's Yehudi?
Who's Yehudi?
Yes, who's Yehudi?
Okay, start the presses again.
Well, Chief, where's Bob Hope now?
He and Basil Rathbone are deep in a dark swamp, paddling their canoe on the trail of Yehudi, the elusive Yehudi.
Job. Paddling this big boat along is some job.
Oh, don't worry. We'll come to water pretty soon. here's some now. Let's put the canoe in it. There, that's better.
I suppose this is all strange to you, Bob.
Oh, no, Basil. I've rushed into swamps lots of times before.
Well, that's radio, Bob. Say, aren't your feet getting a little damp?
Yes, right up to my waist. Say, maybe we should have got a canoe with a bottom in it, huh? Gosh, look at all the mountains surrounding this swamp.
Hello?
Hi, Sierra.
You know, Bob, the trouble with this canoe is that you've got it too crowded with your baggage.
I know, Basil, but you told me I should take along everything I really needed.
I know, but after all, Bob, a full-length mirror.
Say, you know, it's spooky here in this swamp. Careful how you steer, Basil. Be careful. You're going to hit that tree. Weeping Willow.
I hear a coyote.
Ah!
Shh. I hear a wolf.
Going my way, babe.
Look, Bob, let's get out of this canoe. There's the place my crew say Yehudi should be. That old hotel in the middle of the swamp.
What a hotel. Say, what are those black things flying around it? Look, here comes one now, flying right at us.
Hello, boys. Nice weather we're having day before yesterday, won't it be?
Nice weather we're having day before yesterday. Say, who are you?
Oh, we're just bats.
Come on, Bob. Here we are at the door of the hotel.
Basil, I don't like the looks of this place. Let's leave.
Oh, don't be silly, Bob. It's just an old hotel. There's probably nothing in it but spiders. One of the larger kids.
Look, someone's opening the door.
Nice weather we're having. Isn't it a beautiful, embalmy day?
Listen, miss. I'm Basil Rathbone. My friend and I came down here to do some detective work.
Oh, then come in the parlor. Mr. Moto is there.
Well, well, I'd like to meet Mr. Moto.
Fine. I'll raise the lid.
Bob, I'm frightened. There are shivers running up my spine.
Up your spine? Don't you mean up? Up and down your spine?
No. They're too frightened to make the round trip.
Now, gentlemen, while you're at this hotel, remember, if you want anything, just ring for the skeleton.
You mean that skeleton over there, it still works here? How is that possible?
Strong union.
Basil, I'm a little afraid of this place. I'm glad I sent my special investigator, Pinkerton Colon, on ahead to look for Yehudi here. If he followed the same trail we did, he must be in this hotel now. He should be reporting to me any minute.
You peeked. Say, Hope, I just found a wonderful clue. In this room here, I found the bathing suit Yehudi wears when he goes swimming in the lake at Hollywood and Vine.
Kelowna, there's no lake at the corner of Hollywood and Vine.
You native son, you.
Mr. Hope, while you're talking with Detective Kelowna, ask him to solve another mystery. There are 386 girls stopping at this hotel in 386 different rooms. And I just received complaints that in the last 5 minutes, each and every one of them was kissed by a mysterious masher.
Kelowna, did you hear what the lady said?
Ah, yes. I've been a busy little bee, haven't I?
Who's that?
He's a bad bat. I caught him whitewashing himself this morning so he could go to Capistrano.
Well, come on, Bob. Now's our chance to investigate the hotel by ourselves.
Okay, we've got to find Yehudi. Let's look in this room here. You know, this is a hotel. Gee, Basil, I wonder what my right-hand man, Kelowna, is doing now.
Hey, Chief, this is your right-hand man, Kelowna, reporting. I think I've discovered Yehudi. He's here in a cage disguised as a lion, but he can't fool me. I'll reach in and pull off his disguise. Hey, Chief, this is your left-hand man, Kelowna, reporting.
Professor, there's a lion in that room?
Yes, and there are also some turtles here I've been talking to. As I was saying, fellas, you don't pull your heads in fast enough. Now get ready to pull your necks in. One, two, three, go! See? I beat you again!
Kelowna, you're talking to turtles?
Yes, and they're very nice fellows, too.
We're very nice fellows, too.
Mock turtles.
Say, Kelowna, have you found any trace of Yehudi? After all, I'm anxious.
You're anxious?
Yes.
Well, glad to know you're anxious. You know, Beatrice Fairfax and I have had many a good laugh from your letters.
Come on, Basil. He'll never help us. Let's see what's in this room over here.
Get your hands off of me, you dirty rat. Let me alone, I tell you. I'm going crazy. Why did you ever come into my life? Let me alone. All I want to do is die.
Oh, lady, is there anything we can do for you?
Yeah, give me one of those parts Betty Davis has been getting.
Hey, Chief, what's the penalty in the state for resisting an officer?
The penalty? A year in jail.
See, honey, you wouldn't want to waste a year, would you?
Hey, Professor, never mind that girl. What about Yehudi?
Oh, he doesn't care for me. But don't worry, Chief. I'm trailing Yehudi. He's walking across the ceiling, and I'm following him.
Colonna, do you mean to tell me you're walking on the ceiling with your head hanging down?
Sure. Listen. Blood rushing to my head.
Colonna, for your information, what you're doing is impossible. It's against the law of gravity for you to walk around the ceiling upside down.
You had to open your big mouth.
Come on, Bob. Let's look in this next room.
Oh, that woman. She's been feeding me ground glass. Ground glass. I've been eating all that ground glass. It's awful, and now I got the hiccups.
Oh, that's too bad. What have your hiccups got to do with it?
What have my hiccups got to do with it? See what I mean?
A very good idea, giving people ground glass. I'd like to give you some hope. What kind of glass do you like? Percolator grind, Silex grind, or French drip?
Basil, Basil, stop coming after me. You're not the mad doctor anymore. Help, I gotta get out of here. Colonna!
You call, Sire? What's wrong?
Basil is after me. He thinks he's the mad doctor again. Leave me out of here, quick.
All right, follow me through this secret panel.
Colonna, there's no secret panel there.
I know, I just found out. I'm on the wrong page.
So you're trying to help him escape, eh? I've got my trusty shotgun, though. Put up your hand.
Professor, he's got a shotgun. Watch out. He's heading straight for you. He'll kill you.
Oh, no, he won't. I'll hypnotize him. I'll stare at him with both eyes. I'll stare at him with one eye.
You're next, Pope.
Oh, look, Basil, wake up. You're not the mad doctor. You're a guest on my program.
What do you think made me mad?
Again we go, and if you like the show, please dial Tuesday again. And though there's no admission to the show, a smile helps to get in. Thanks, Basil Rathbone, our guest. Though we take a rest in Yehudi's quest, you were grand. Use Pepsodent, folks, 'cause next week, folks, we'll be back with the same gang and that grand little songstress, Judy Starr.
And ladies and gentlemen, as a special added attraction, none other than Bob Hope.
Thank you, Bill Goodman. Good night, everybody.
And from January of 1941, there's The Bob Hope Show with special guest star Basil Rathbone. In a moment, the award-winning mystery series Murder by Experts and Big Money as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Murder by Experts aired from June of 1949 through December 1951 and was awarded the Mystery Writers of America's prestigious Edgar Award, presented on air by Alfred Hitchcock. The program came about because Mutual had an opening in their schedule, and its program director Jules Seebeck looked for something to fill it. Playwright David Cogan teamed up with Robert Arthur in 1938, and Cogan and Arthur Productions produced radio scripts for some 14 years for a variety of programs, including The Shadow, Dark Destiny, and, of course, Murder by Experts. On today's program, a man who can't remember his past is involved in a plot to get unclaimed inheritance money. From July of 1949, it's Big Money, starring James Stevens, Wendell Holmes, and Ann Shepherd, on this edition of Yesteryear.
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, Mr. John Dixon Carr, world-famous mystery novelist and author of the recently published bestseller, The Life of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
This is John Dixon Carr.
Each week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery, which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective writers. Those experts who are themselves masters of the art of murder and can hold tensity at its highest. This time, our guest expert is the noted mystery writer, Miss Frances Crane. From the many thrillers she has read and enjoyed, Miss Crane has selected a gripping and dramatic story by Philip Andrews. And now we present James Stevens in The Big Money.
The big money. Yeah, I was in the big money. An hour and a half ago, I had $7 million. I had a wife, too. Slender, dark-haired, green eyes, and a cute figure. But she's gone now. She left me 1 hour and 30 minutes ago. No, 1 hour, 31 minutes, and 20 seconds ago. And she took the money with her. That's not all she took. She took my life. I wish she'd come back. I want my life back. I don't care about the money. She could keep that. After all, it only took me a month to earn it. That's right, 1 month. 30 days to earn $7 million. What's the trick? You have to be born for it. Born for the big money. And I was. I always knew it. As far back as I can remember, even back in prison, even back before that in military hospitals while the docs patched up my face and tried to patch up my memory, I knew I was born for the big money. That's why I wasn't downhearted when they let me out of the big house with the usual five spot and a ticket to the city and no prospects. The warden tried to give me a pep talk, but I put him in his place fast, believe you me.
George, I'm glad you're leaving us today. I won't keep you long, but I want to help you if I can.
That's nice of you, warden. Mighty nice.
The prison psychiatrist says you only have a partial memory of your military service and no memory at all of the period before that.
That's right. I remember coming to in a hospital and being told a shell burst had knocked me out and cut up my face. That's as far back as it goes.
We've checked your army career. You're a troublemaker. In fact, you were under arrest on charges of stealing government property when that shell hit the guardhouse.
So what, warden?
You were dishonorably discharged. But still, it might be possible to get medical treatment for your condition. Now, if you want me to contact the proper authorities...
Skip it. Suppose I could remember everything that happened to me. I don't wanna. Growing up in a slum, being kicked around, who wants to remember that kind of stuff?
But your parents, your family, don't you want to find them again?
They probably forgot me years ago. I'm looking ahead, not behind me. Take the average guy with a memory. He can't concentrate. He's distracted by all the things he remembers. Me? I can look straight ahead and stick to business. That business is getting myself into the big money.
Well, if that's how you feel, I won't say any more. Good luck anyway.
Thanks, warden. Thanks, anyway. So that was that. 10 minutes later, I was a free man after 2 long years. I hiked straight for the railroad station and caught the first express for New York. Then I ambled back to the club car and ordered a drink. I relaxed and sat back, feeling good, very good. Across the aisle, a girl was reading a magazine. A knockout. Black hair, green eyes, and lips like rosebuds. Pretty soon she saw me watching her, but she was smooth. She didn't even seem to look at me while she gave me a long, steady once-over. She was interested, I knew that. She turned to a short, plump, white-haired man beside her and whispered something. White hair gave me a long look, too. Then he got up and came across, smooth as butter.
I beg your pardon. I have the feeling we're acquainted, but I can't quite bring your name to mind.
My name's George Cook, if that's any help.
Cook. Now, I'm afraid I've mistaken you for someone else. Yes, of course. You remind me strongly of my old friend, Howard Vincent.
Never heard of him.
The likeness is striking. But my apologies. I didn't mean to intrude upon you.
Oh, you're not intruding.
Davenport is my name. Philo Davenport.
Mr. Davenport? Trains are pretty dull when you're traveling alone, don't you think?
Insufferably dull. Perhaps you'd care to join me and my niece for a drink, Mr. Cook.
He didn't have to ask me twice. In fact, he didn't have to ask me once. Because if they hadn't picked me up, I was going to pick them up. In 10 minutes, we were as cozy as three mice in a cheese factory. Marlene was her name. Marlene. Saying it was like tasting old brandy. Marlene and I got along fine. But I could feel them both sizing me up, eyeing my going away from prison suit. And I knew they were sharpshooters with some cute game on their minds. By and by, Marlene came to the point I knew they were interested in.
Oh, very witty, Mr. Cook. What line of business are you in? Traveling salesman?
Now, my dear, you mustn't ask personal questions.
I don't mind, Mr. Davenport. The truth is, I'm a free traveler.
A free traveler? What's that?
Well, you see, they set me free this afternoon, and now I'm traveling.
Very good, Mr. Cook. Very good. Such frankness is refreshing.
And what business are you in, Mr. Davenport?
Well, I'm part lawyer and part detective. I have a specialty all my own. I trace heirs to unclaimed fortunes.
Interesting business. You ever find them?
Frequently. In fact, much oftener than I have any right to expect.
Oh, now, Uncle Philo, you mustn't boast.
Of course not, my dear.
125th Street. Next stop, 125th Street.
Well, this seems to be our stop, Mr. Cook. Where are you staying in town?
I haven't quite made up my mind. I thought I'd look around a bit first.
I see. Marlene and I would like to have you come call on us tomorrow, the next day. Wouldn't we, my dear?
Oh, we'd love it if you would.
Well, in that case, I will.
Fine, George. Here's my card. Don't fail us now.
Please promise you'll come, George.
All right, Marlene. I'll drop in on you. Sure, I was going to drop in on him. Philo obviously was up to some little game, and if I could find out what, it might pay me. So I dropped in the very next morning at 2 a.m. I didn't bother to wake Philo or Marlene. What kind of a friend would disturb them at that hour? I just let myself in with a picklock, found the living room, and started going through it. I began with the drawers of a mahogany desk. And I was just getting going when the overhead light snapped on, and Philo's voice said...
Good morning, George. So nice of you to come see us so soon.
I turned, nice and carefully. There was Philo in a dinner jacket and Marlene wearing a gown that started at the floor and stopped unexpectedly.
Oh, now, Uncle Philo, don't make George think he isn't welcome. Put away that gun. Offer him a drink.
Of course, my dear. George, if I put away this gun, will you sit down for a glass of brandy and a nice quiet chat?
Why not, Philo? I'll sit here on the couch. I was just looking around the room while I waited for you.
Admirable. Marlene... He's our man.
I know he is. Congratulations, George. I'll get the brandy, Uncle Philo.
You know, George, I made a bet with Marlene you'd show up tonight.
Philo, I underestimated you. So you were waiting for me?
Yes, we've been waiting for you. Since we left you on the train, I've checked your entire career. Your army record, your being wounded, your prison sentence for robbery after your discharge, your loss of memory, everything.
That's fast work.
Well, it's my business. On the train, Marlene and I were startled at your resemblance to a certain Howard Vincent.
Yeah, you mentioned him before. Who is he?
I'll come to that in a moment. I said that my business is finding missing heirs who have fortunes waiting for them. I'm successful at it, George, because sometimes when an heir can't be found, I create one.
Philo, I'm beginning to think you aren't honest.
Which brings me now to Howard Vincent. He died in a train wreck in 1941. I saw his body, but only I know for certain that he is dead.
I see. Go on.
For 4 years, an estate of $7 million has been waiting for him to turn up to claim it.
$7 million?
And a few odd thousand.
Here's the brandy, Uncle Philo.
Oh, thank you, my dear. Thank you. Here you are, George.
Right.
Now I propose a toast to Howard Vincent, formerly George Cook, and to $7 million. Divided 50-50.
This was it. What I'd always known would happen someday. The break. The big money. $7 million. $7 million just waiting for me to reach out and grab it. The three of us sat up most of the night while Philo outlined the deal.
You see, George, you're perfect for the part of Howard Vincent. You look enough like him so that we can claim it's the scars from your wound that keep the resemblance from being exact.
I think they rather improve your looks, George. I wouldn't want you to look too much like Vincent. In his photographs, he's rather vicious looking.
Well, thanks, Marlene. I never dreamed that shell burst was going to blow me right into $7 million.
$3.5 million. Remember?
Oh, sure. 3.5.
Your loss of early memory is also very fortunate. Ordinarily, we would have to fake it to explain why you didn't remember little details of your past.
And that's so hard to do. Uncle Philo tried it once, but the results were very bad, weren't they, Uncle Philo?
Let's not dwell on that case, my dear. In this instance, George's army medical history authenticates his condition, so he doesn't need to remember a thing.
I told the warden that memories only handicap a man.
Your prison record will have to be freely admitted. Naturally, you'll be thoroughly checked.
Sure. But suppose they manage to trace me back to before the army, to the time I can't remember about. What then?
They won't. You see, I am in charge of the search for Vincent.
You? How come, Philo?
Howard Vincent was a typical rich man's son. Too much money, too much freedom. You know the story, George?
Sure, I've read it a dozen times.
It was back in 1941. He got mixed up in something really nasty and disappeared. Then the family got word he'd been killed in the wreck of the Western Flyer in Wyoming. You remember, 30 dead. Oh, but I forgot. You don't remember.
I'll look it up in the papers. Go on.
Uncle Philo flew out and found that a watch and a wallet belonging to Vincent had been recovered from the wreckage. There were also three bodies, any one of which might be Vincent.
I get the picture. He was a little hard to identify by then.
Yes, but I recognized one of the three as poor dear Howard Vincent all the same. However, I was already foreseeing, shall we say, future possibilities.
Philo, now I know you're not honest.
Well, I came back to report. I hadn't been able to identify any of the dead as Howard. He might still be alive. So his father kept on hoping. When the old man died in 1945, he left his money to his son, provided Howard could be found within 7 years. And he left me an annual retainer to keep looking for him.
And now at last you found him.
No, my dear. Not for several weeks yet. You see, we have careful preparations to make. Very, very careful preparations.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Philo's plan was nice and simple. I went down to the Bowery and got a room in a cheap flop house. Next day, I found a job as a mechanic. Every day after that, I ate lunch in Battery Park near the Wall Street District. At the end of 3 weeks, Philo just happened to be walking through the park and saw me. Next day, he brought old Mr. Peebles, the lawyer for the Vincent estate, to give me the once-over. Mr. Peebles oohed and aahed, and I was discovered. As easy as that. Of course, it didn't end there. They asked me a million questions. They traced my record, prison, army, hospital, wound, everything. They had high-priced docs check me over to be sure my lack of memory was on the level. But at the end of the month, they hadn't proved I wasn't Howard Vincent. And then Philo and I gave little Mr. Peebles the clincher. The old one, too.
Well, Mr. Peebles, are you satisfied that we've really found Howard at last?
Dear me, Mr. Davenport, I just can't seem to make up my mind whether he is Howard or not. I think he is, but it'd be dreadful if we made a mistake.
How completely right you are, Mr. Peebles. But I think I have the evidence that will settle our doubts for good and all.
Why, it's a college history book, one of the books Howard used at Yale.
Yesterday, I had an inspiration. I searched all of Howard's old books, and at last I found what I'd hoped for. See, here on page 98.
Yes, a faded fingerprint in ink on the margin.
Made one night 10 years ago when Howard was studying. The only fingerprint of his we've ever located.
So it is. My goodness, this is important. This will tell us beyond question whether this young man is Howard or not.
Yes, we only have to compare his fingerprints with this print Howard made 10 years ago, and we'll know. Well, George, are you willing to make the test?
Certainly I am. If I'm not Howard Vincent, I want to know it. If I am, I want to enjoy it.
A very reasonable attitude. Dear me, yes. Will you make the print, Mr. Davenport?
Well, Philo made a print of my index finger, and little Mr. Peebles squinted at it, then at the print in the history book. He spent at least 5 minutes doing it, mumbling to himself.
This is an important moment. Very important moment. Dear me. Yes. Yes, I'm sure of it. The prince match. You are Howard Vincent. Congratulations, my boy. Congratulations.
Of course the prince matched. Philo had faked that print in the history book a month before. I was in. The big money at last. $7 million. Yes, seven, not 3.5. I didn't have any more idea of splitting with Philo than of flying to the moon. Naturally, I didn't tell him that. Not yet. I sort of got the feel of things first. I settled into being Howard Vincent very, very quietly. You know how the big money works. Hush, hush. That's how I wanted it. But pretty soon, I felt as if I'd been Howard Vincent all my life. And I began to enjoy it. But I couldn't put Philo off forever. And the showdown came one morning in my plushy private office at the very top of the Vincent building. Philo and Marlene were both there. And they got down to business fast.
Well, George, you've adapted yourself to wealth very quickly. Enjoying yourself, eh?
I certainly am, Philo. I always knew I was meant for this kind of life. It seems to come natural to me.
I believe I could get used to it myself. Which brings up the matter of my split.
Of course, Philo, but it'll take time. It has to be arranged. Very smoothly arranged.
Oh, we understand that, George. It isn't that Uncle Philo distrusts you. He'd just hate to have a misunderstanding spoil our friendship.
It's a big job turning over half the estate without anyone getting suspicious.
Of course it is, my boy. Of course it is. And I'm going to give you 2 years to do it in. Three, if you think necessary. But I will want monthly installments of at least $50,000 until the final settlement.
$50,000 a month, but Philo...
Oh, George, that isn't so very much. Out of all the millions you'd never have had but for Uncle Philo.
Oh, all right. You win. $50,000 a month.
I'm glad you're seeing it my way. And now that that is settled, we won't be meeting again, George.
We won't? Why not?
Uncle Philo means he'll feel safer if he's where you can't try to kill him, George.
Kill him? That's ridiculous. I wouldn't dream of any such thing, Philo. You know that.
Of course I do, my boy. Especially since as soon as I leave here, I intend to write out a complete account of this interesting affair and leave it with a friend to be forwarded to the police if anything violent should happen to me.
Now, that's not necessary, Philo.
Nevertheless, I shall feel better when it's done. Marlene, my dear, shall we go now?
In a minute, Uncle Philo. I want to powder my nose first. I'll be right back.
No hard feelings, I hope, George. It's only good business, you know, to take precautions.
Of course there's no hard feelings. I'm still making out pretty good. Here, let me ring for the elevator for you. You might as well ride down in my private car.
A private elevator? Well, great wealth has its privileges, as I hope to find out.
Funny. I push the button, but I don't hear the car coming.
Perhaps it's already at this floor. Try the door.
All right, I will. Well, how do you like that? The door opens, but the elevator isn't here. The shaft is empty.
Well, that's very odd. There's something wrong with the mechanism. The door shouldn't open if the car... George! George, what are you doing? What are you grabbing me for? Let go of me, George! No! No! Ah!
I shoved hard, and Philo went down the elevator shaft, clawing at empty air and moving his feet like a ballet dancer. His scream coming back to me, channeled upwards by the shaft. He screamed, and then he stopped. Yes, there was something wrong with the elevator, all right. I discovered it that morning, but I hadn't reported it. Instead, I'd sent for Philo and Marlene for this showdown. Now Philo was disposed of. Accidentally, with no comeback at me. I only had to take care of Marlene. I closed the elevator door and stood there, trying to act calm, but the perspiration was popping out on my brow. They'd find Philo in a moment. Was it Marlene ever coming back? Then she came.
Well, here I am. But George, where's Uncle Philo?
Yeah, he's in the elevator. I'm going down with you. We'll stop at the bank. I'm making a small advance payment.
In the elevator? Oh, all right. Open the door, George. Go on, open it.
She wasn't close enough. I had to stall. Get her closer. The door seems to be stuck. Give me a hand, Marlene.
No, thank you, George. I'd rather not.
But Marlene...
Stay right there, George. Don't come any closer. You see, darling, I have a nice ladylike gun in my purse.
Marlene, what is this? A gag?
No, I didn't powder my nose, George. I found I'd forgotten my compact, and I came back. I was outside the door when I heard you talking about the elevator, and then Uncle Philo screamed. Poor Uncle Philo. I thought he was smarter than that.
So did he. But he wasn't. A baby could have taken care of Philo. Well, go on, grab the phone. Call the cops.
I could. But what good would that do either of us?
I don't get you.
Uncle Philo is dead. I can't help him any. But you're not dead. And I can help you.
Since what are you leading up to, Marlene?
I know you murdered Uncle Philo. But you'd be safe. And I couldn't testify against you. If you married me, George.
Maybe Marlene had a baby voice, but her mind was like a steel trap. Sure, I married her. She had the whip hand. She helped me cover up Philo's death as an accident. Then she moved in and took over.
Oh, it's nice to be rich, isn't it, George? Poor Uncle Philo. How he would have loved all this.
I thought we agreed to forget Philo.
Oh, we did, didn't we? All right, I'll change the subject then. I saw a dream of a diamond necklace at Carter's today.
No, I won't buy it. You're spending money as if I had all the dough in the world. Marlene,
You'll do nothing, George. Please sit down and stop clenching your hands. You know you're never going to touch me. If anything should ever happen to me, and I mean anything, a friend will send a complete account of this impersonation of yours to the police. So you're going to take good care of me, darling. And that being the case, why don't we be friends? I'm not such bad company, am I, George?
No, Marlene wasn't bad company. She was very good company when she wanted to be. And that written account to go to the cops if anything happened to her protected her better than a bodyguard could have. So I made the best of it. We got along all right. Except that Marlene spent money like crazy. Until one night on our private terrace, 20 stories up, with a bottle of Napoleon brandy open between us, I began to feel sleepy. Very sleepy. Too sleepy. I tried to stand up, and I couldn't. I flopped back in the deck chair like a rag doll. And Marlene stood up and leaned over me.
George? George?
What is it?
Why don't you go inside instead of falling asleep out here on the terrace?
Go inside? Yeah, that's a good idea. I tried to stand up again. This time, with Marlene's help, I made it. She stood very close while I wobbled to keep my balance. And I knew she'd put something in the brandy. Liquor by itself couldn't have done that to me. Marlene! Marlene!
Yes, George?
What'd you put in the brandy?
Just a few drops of something, George, dear. Steady. Mustn't fall, not yet. We're not close enough to the railing.
What are you up to?
You've never stopped trying to find a way to be rid of me, have you, George? But you'll never succeed because I can make plans, too. And I've made my plans to be your widow.
That's crazy. You can't get away with it.
Oh, of course I can. You're going to have an accident. You're going to fall 20 floors from this balcony to the nice, hard street. Now, come over here, George. Another step. That's right.
No, I won't. You can't.
No, but I can. What I put in the brandy has made you helpless as a baby. Matthew the butler will testify how drunk you were. George, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
George, let go of my wrist.
You can make plans.
George, let me go.
But you overestimated how far gone I was. I'm pretty wobbly.
Let me go,
George. Wobbly enough for you to push me over any rail.
Oh, I was just joking with you, George. I was just trying to scare you. Let go of me.
Oh, no, you don't.
George.
We're going inside. I'm gonna teach you a little lesson. Stop struggling. It won't do you any good.
George, let go of me.
Marlene.
Let go.
Marlene, look out. She was gone. She went the same route Philo had taken. But this time, I'd have given both arms to save her. I stood there trying to get hold of myself, and behind me, I heard the French door open. I turned. It was Matthew, the butler, gargling at me.
Mr. Vincent. Mr. Vincent.
Matthew. You saw. Saw her try to push me over, didn't you? You saw her try to push me and slip and go over herself?
Saw her try to push you over? Mr. Vincent, sir, I saw you murder your wife.
Well, that's the story. You, Mr. Peebles, and all you others. I sure had you fooled. Howard Vincent, that's a laugh. I was born in the gutters, but born for the big money, and I had it, even if it didn't last. After what Matthews told you, I know you'll never believe I didn't kill Marlene. With those documents Marlene left to be turned over to the cops, well, I guess I've come to the end of the road. But you can't get the big money without paying for it somehow, can you?
Oh, Howard. Howard, my boy.
Yes, Mr. Peebles?
Marlene didn't leave any documents.
She didn't? But she said...
Oh,
she...
that was just an effort to keep her hold over you. You see, shortly after we accepted you as Howard Vincent, we found a box of your boyhood toys. And among them was a paint box covered with fingerprints and dried paint.
Then why didn't you nab me? Why'd you let me get away with it?
Because they were your fingerprints. My boy, this was all so unnecessary. You are and always have been Howard Vincent.
And so the curtain falls on the big money. This is your host, John Dixon Carr, hoping you'll be with us next week at this time.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
From July of 1949, there's Murder by Experts and Big Money. Well, that does it for this edition of Yesteryear. We invite you to join us again next week at this time for more of the best of the golden age of radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination.